Grape House calling for a change to elderly driver assessments, claiming the process for assessing driver capability is penalising the very people who need their licences the most. Grape House Acting Vice President David Marshall says a nationwide survey of members has revealed a lack of practical driving assessors in the regions and widespread use of cognitive tests, Smart MD and Mini ACE, to assess driver impairment. And he says elderly drivers who fail these tests but want to maintain their licences are often faced with forking out hundreds of dollars for assessments and having to go out on unfamiliar roads. Meanwhile, the Canadian driving researcher, Dr. Alexander Krizzle, says there's no evidence to support the continued use of cognitive dementia tests to assess driver impairment. He begins by explaining what the cognitive test SMART-MD is.
Well, the SMART-MD is essentially a screening tool that's used to try to identify drivers who might be at risk. And the test itself, in some jurisdictions, have been employed. In others, it hasn't been so much. But there's been a lot of controversy about its use and the fact that it doesn't do a very good job at identifying people who are at risk. And the reason why there's so much controversy is because if you do somehow fail that test, many don't undergo a road test. They just lose their license. And that's been a huge issue for many, and the argument is really that that test doesn't do a great job at measuring the driving skills needed to fully functionally operate a vehicle, and failure of that test doesn't accurately measure a person's ability to drive safely. So there's been a lot of controversy around that test specifically, and I think as evidence is mounting on its ineffectiveness, you're starting to see that test being pulled. But it has been in use for a while, and there just hasn't been a lot of data supporting its challenges. And so now as that information is coming out, you're starting to see more conversations about what tests can you do? Is there something better? What should the process be like?
All right. Dr. Krizzle, yeah. just looking at it, it's things like remember a name that someone's not been confronted with, repeat it back 5 minutes later, recite the months of the year backwards, etc. Convert a series of numbers into letters. Five becomes F-I-V-E. In New Zealand, we also have what's called the Mini ACE test, which asks what day, date, month of the year it is, remember a name and address, name as many animals as possible in a minute. Is that a manifestly different test, or is it the same ilk?
Well, the test itself measures a few different abilities than what you get on the SMART-MD. It is similar to the Montreal Cognitive Assessment. I think the difference with the Mini-ACE is that it's much quicker to administer. It doesn't take as long, which I think that's the benefit of it. If you're a clinician, you don't have a lot of time. You need something that you can administer very quick in a short amount of time that can tell you some sort of information about that client or patient. The Mini-ACE, though, is not a perfect test either. It doesn't have a ton of evidence with respect to people that have various medical conditions. So it's also a test that doesn't have a lot of data behind it. I think still more is needed, but it is a shorter version of the test compared to the SMART, and it does measure some different abilities than what the SMART would have measured.
What are we trying to understand? Research has shown, I understand it, that drivers with dementia have a higher crash risk. So obviously there's a desire to minimise risk or to make appropriate decisions at the appropriate time. But what is the test essentially trying to understand, and how does it relate to driving?
Right. So, you know, driving itself is a very complex task. I mean, we probably don't think about how challenging it is. But if you think about the task itself, you have to be able to interpret your environment. You have to be able to spatially understand where you are in relation to other vehicles and pedestrians. You have to be able to perceive what's going on, make an appropriate decision and action, and carry it out. And these tests, what they're trying to do is measure snippets of all those tasks that are required for driving. But they're not designed for driving. They're designed to identify people that have cognitive impairment. And there's sometimes a disconnect between identifying the deficits of cognitive impairment, because they are different for every person, and its relationship to driving. So we don't have a specific test that's used just for understanding the driving deficits. We have these tests that we use to try to identify people that have cognitive impairment and/or dementia, and then we relate it to the driving task.
So what you're alluding to is that people with dementia, particularly early stage dementia, can continue to drive safely. It's very individualized. Would that sum it up?
I think so. Every person is different. The deficits that are exhibited in those that have early stage dementia or cognitive impairment are different. There's been many studies that show that there are people who have early stage dementia who are still driving and can do so safely. And that is because, again, the deficits that are showing are varied and they're not the same. And that's why we need better tests to identify these specific deficits to really understand what are the issues that are occurring when people have cognitive impairment, because they are not the same for every person.
You have been reviewing the SAMARD test for, I think you did your first review over a decade ago, and you've done others since. What did your analysis of it show? How did you go about it?
So with the SMART MD, what we did was, so typically there's two things that happen. The first is that in research we require we rely on volunteers. And so if you're a volunteer that we're trying to recruit for a study, and I tell you, I would love to have you participate, but if you fail the road test, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to, take away your license potentially. You're probably not going to get many volunteers. And the volunteers you do get, they tend to be the most healthy, most confident, the best educated. They tend not to have too many problems. And that's an issue that we have in research. A lot of the articles that are published in those that are healthy. But we're not trying to identify healthy people. We're trying to identify issues that are prevalent in people who are not healthy. And that's the challenge we have. And so what happens when you have these really healthy people in studies and you have someone who's maybe not performing as well, but still defined as healthy, then we say, oh, okay, well, these are the cut points that you need to use. But essentially, we're still identifying healthy people. So that's one problem. And the other issue is really the mix of people that we tend to get in studies. They tend to be very heterogeneous. We're not looking at people that have specific medical conditions and how these tests apply to all of them. So that's the balance that we're trying to work with. And I think the shift is if we want to have tests that are used to identify people that have deficits, we need to use these tests in people who have deficits, legitimate deficits. And some of the work that we've done is working with the occupational therapists who get clients who are referred because they have some sort of deficit. And when we've done that, we'd be able to see kind of the worst of the worst. And now we have a better sense of how well these clinical tests use. They're still not perfect. And that's because the clinical tests still don't pick up the deficits that we're trying to measure. So there's a lot of challenges. And with the MD, the SMART MD, what we found was, again, there's two issues. The first is that it doesn't identify people accurately. So you have people that would fail the SMART MD, but then pass the road test, and vice versa. You have people that pass the road test, but then would fail the SMART MD. But from a practical standpoint, you're looking at almost a 20% failure rate and maybe a 50% indeterminate rate, and maybe another 25 or 30% that might pass. From a logistical standpoint, that means you're testing 70% of your clients on the road. And if you put that on a population level, that's a lot of road tests that you're conducting that you shouldn't have to conduct. So it's not a feasible alternative from a licensing authority standpoint, just based on the fact that there's such a big backlog already. And you're putting people through stress that they don't need to go through because they shouldn't have to be taking a road test if they could clearly pass. But that test is going to fail people on the basis of primarily if you can't remember what's in a grocery store.
All
Because
right,
that is the bulk.
so where do we go from here? NZTA, the National Transport Agency here, Waka Kotahi, says this test is not mandated, but it is to be used at the health practitioner physician's discretion. And I'm presuming that applies to either of these tests, the SAMARD or the Mini-ACE test. And then if there's a fail, a practical test can be sought. Now, you've already alluded to the problem with that. We're getting a backlog and it's getting bigger in this country. Or alternatively, someone might not pursue that. It's just too hard. So is there a way forward? Is there any use for this particular test, ultimately, at the GP level? Or if not, how do we fairly and accurately assess risk for an individual?
So, I mean, in my opinion, I would urge caution with continuing to use the SMARD. We've been lobbying against it here in Canada as well. The challenge is, as you've alluded to, is what do you use instead? And I think if it's possible to have multiple short tests that you can complete that can give you some information on different cognitive domains. So you might see something like the trail making B test, which is a paper and pencil test that can be done in a few minutes. It measures the ability to shift attention between numbers and letters. It's basically connecting the numbers and letters in sequential order. And it measures your ability to process that information and make kind of these accurate connections, but a very quick test, and it just gives these snippets as to what might be going on. And the same could be said for other types of tests. But the other tests that are currently available, it just takes too long. It's not feasible in a GP clinic. And we don't have a short test right now that can accurately measure the deficits that you would see in driving. We don't. And a single item question isn't going to cut it at this point, because it doesn't really encompass what's going on. And so you need these measures that have multiple components. And
so I think what happens in Canada, what happens elsewhere, Dr. Crizzle, because right now we've got this growing backlog, not because of this issue specifically. We've got very high immigration at the moment, and there's a lot of people trying to get their licenses converted from overseas. There's all sorts of issues, and the delays are going backwards and backwards and backwards, in terms of how long people are waiting. So what, if anything, happens in other jurisdictions? Do all roads come back to needing to redo a practical test, or is there anything else that's helping manage this?
Yeah, and that's a great question. We're struggling with the same issue. Every province does something different. The most stringent province, I would say, in Canada is Ontario. And what they will mandate is that at age 80 and every 2 years thereafter, you'd have to undergo a knowledge test, a rules of the road test, a vision test, and complete the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, which is also a very brief screening tool that looks at various things from, attention, awareness, orientation, memory, things like that, just to see how well you perform. And if you fail, then you get referred for a road test. If you pass, you keep your license for another 2 years and you come back. But in other jurisdictions, they don't know what to do just yet, just because, again, there's just so much of a gray area, and what to implement with what resources and time, that's been a challenge. And many provinces still haven't figured that out yet.
Thank you.
So this is an issue. But at the end of the day, the road test is the only way to really know if someone can drive safely or not.
Thank you. That is Dr. Alexander Crizzle, who has for years been reviewing this research into test, the SMARD MD, and a similar test that is used also in New Zealand, Mini ACE. You're listening to 9 to Noon with Catherine Ryan on RNZ National. Let's bring in David Marshall now. He is with Grey Power. He's acting vice president. David, thanks for your time.
Thanks very much.
What are people experiencing that you're hearing about and worrying about?
The major thing is that there's a very high stress level amongst older people who are facing going and getting their certificate from the doctor because of what they've heard others have experienced. So we find that it's very variable around the country what is happening, with the barrier to license renewal being very high for some and very low for others. So that creates a lot of concern. Some GPs are still using the SMARD MD test, while, as we've discussed, others are using the mock test, or more commonly probably now, the Mini ACE. And we have surgeries that have mandated that every patient will have the Mini ACE test, and that is really creating a lot of fear and anger even, because some just find it insulting.
I know that you've been surveying on this issue, and the current method, we should say, medical assessment by GPs at age 75, 80, and then every 2 years afterwards. Yes. What were the specifics that people told you about their experience of this?
Most feel upset that they have to go through this sort of test if it's being compulsory, and find it a bit insulting in a way when they've been driving for a long time, and particularly if they've had no accidents or anything, and then they fail this test, they really get pretty upset because they don't see it's relevant to their driving.
Well, they're being told by a researcher that it's not relevant to their driving to a considerable degree, or that it's not reliable as an indicator.
Right.
And so let's talk about the consequence if they do fail the test. As we mentioned, just numbers coming out in the last day or so show that the wait to sit a driver's test, sit a practical again, is getting longer and longer and longer for a variety of reasons. And also there is the cost, David. What's the cost of resitting?
Okay, so the GPs appear to be doing either referring people for an on-road safety test, and the cost of that is not high. It's in the $20 mark. However, if they send them to an occupational therapist, we're talking about around about $800. And some who have responded to the survey, it's been $1,200 because the occupational therapist has come to see them. And for many, that is just too big a burden, and the fear that they may not pass, so they just give up their license.
So who decides whether it's an on-road test or an occupational therapist? Is that a decision that the GP makes?
Yes.
And with the on-road test, $20, can you just join the queue at the moment that's doing a road test, or is it a shorter version of the road test that a new driver might sit?
Okay, so this is a bit complicated. The issue, and particularly affecting rural people who are not in main centres, is that there are very few places that offer this particular test. And so they have to, the assessor has to be qualified. And we have asked NZTA, why can we not get assessors who are currently teaching people to drive to do it? And we're told, no, they are not qualified to do the on-road safety test, which we find a little bit, a bit surprising that you can be qualified to teach someone to drive, but you're not qualified to assess if someone can drive safely.
Can we have a look at a couple of the issues, though, that remain, which is, I think, out of some old survey data, two-thirds who reported to you reported that their licence was restored after a further assessment. That means that one-third who failed that test at the GP didn't have their licence restored. Does that mean that they sat and failed the resit, David, or something else?
I can't give a definitive answer on that, because from the research that I've been doing recently, many are giving up because of the few people qualified to test and where they're located, that many people are having to travel 50 kilometres or more to somewhere that they are not familiar with to do this test.
All right.
And they see that as too big a barrier. And they're worried perhaps they have to travel on a main highway. They normally just travel around in their town or in the rural area. And so some will give up. Others, yes, do fail. And they can have a go another time, which is not too bad. But trying to get in, there can be delays of at least 2 months. So their temporary license has to be renewed again. They've got to go through that process. And so it is really quite disconcerting. And I had a lady from where I live who went 45 kilometres to do hers on a road with roadworks, And in the end, she got held up for 2 hours and missed the appointment and has now decided not to renew her licence.
Look, we know how important driving is to people, how important it is to their independence, self-esteem, and ensuring that they're battling isolation as best they can, or avoiding isolation. But there's one other statistic we can't ignore, and that is that the 85 plus age band has the highest rate of what's called DSI, or deaths and serious injuries in accidents. Yep. So there's two sides to the coin, isn't there? The difficulty Absolutely. We've got at the moment is how to do this well.
Absolutely. And in talking to GPs, it's the job they hate most, is telling a long-term patient that they don't think they should be driving anymore. So if they have something that's more independent that they can use, that's helpful. And I think that's why some have taken, for example, the Mini Ace, and to avoid problems have said, well, we're going to give it to everybody. And that then creates more problems, because people hear about it and are then really worried when they go, and then freeze up when they're asked something and can't remember. So it's trying to find what is the best practical way of doing this. And I think we'd like to see that the doctors use their own assessment of the patient and do all of the medical tests that they need to do, you know, with eyesight, and if people have got other conditions. If they feel the person is got early stage dementia, then use one of these tests to give them more information, but not with all people. And also, as many have found, there are no questions about the road code, understanding that. There is no questions about their accidents that they've had in the past or recently or anything. And so people come out feeling that the test has nothing to do with driving. It's their memory. And that's what's really challenging.
That is Grey Power Acting Vice President David Marshall. Waka Kotahi is actually reviewing how to assess medical fitness to drive right now, expected to release in June its proposal.